Hi, everybody. Welcome to Season 4, Episode 22 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry Podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McAnthony, Chairman and Co-Owner of Peterborough United. And we're recording this the morning after, at least for me here in Florida, the afternoon after for you in Dubai. A nice win for the posh against Northampton.
So I'm going to apologise for looking like Tom Hanks out of Castaway, as you can see. And say hello to your son there in the background. I'm just waving.
Oh, is he?
It's all right. All the kids going to school.
Yeah.
So yeah, as you can see, I'm like an itinerant at the moment. The way I look, you know what I mean? It's is that a PC word? Are you allowed to use the word itinerant?
I think so. We'll soon find out.
Well, yeah, you're calling at me on Twitter. Shit. I think last time we spoke was just after the Blackpool game.
Yeah, you had Cambridge, Exeter, and Northampton since we last spoke.
Yeah, so we've had two derbies, we've had Exeter. So, quick recap, obviously, without boring people. Cambridge, comfortable 1-0 win, as comfortable as you're ever going to get with a 1-0, should be more. Exeter, not as comfortable. Their manager posed some problems for us. They you know, put some tests and challenges in. We overcame them, won the game. It was comfortable in the second half. But, you know, Jed Steer hasn't had a lot to do the last three games, which is great, because that's what you want. And then another game last night, and you're thinking Tuesday night, you know, Derby under the lights, Northampton, you know, done very well this season, physical side. We controlled it. The only goal they scored was their first corner, and I still don't know how from 2 yards out they fucking headed it in. But to be fair, it didn't deter us. You know, we look like we're in the mood. We look like, you know, we got the appetite. We look fresh. We look quick. You know, I've been talking about for the last probably few months in the podcast, I really want to see the team in full flow in the final third when opposing teams have tired legs. So I'm hoping I kind of get that wish. I think a big factor was the manager bringing Ricky back in. I want to be careful what I say about Ricky, because there's a certain element of our fan base who don't love the kid for some reason. You know, and I say something, then they want to throw that in my face or, you know, do whatever, which is a real shame when you have a homegrown product. But as the manager says, and people in football who know, you will not find a pressing centre forward like that kid anywhere in the EFL, like anywhere. And I really feel for him that, like last night, I mean, their goalie in back four, you ask them. If any of the fans who don't like Ricky, go and ask the five people he played against that basically single-handedly fucking chased them down for most of that game, where he basically retired them. I think like a couple of the defenders were fucking subbed off.
Just keeps on going.
Their goalie fucking shit himself three times where he's nearly like hit it off Ricky and into the goal. He's like, he did it on Saturday against Exeter. We were a bit flat up front. We weren't pressing. He came on the last 25 minutes and we scored a goal and is pressing again. And everyone wants to go on about what he doesn't do, and he's not prolific and he hasn't scored loads of goals. But those in the know, those who actually have football intelligence, realize that a player with his pressing, the way we're set up and what we do and what we play, you've got Ronnie Edwards, who's like a quarterback. Then you've got the main quarterback, Archie Collins, who pulls the strings. Yeah. But then you've got your threats and the best wingers in the league and Poku and Ephraim Mason-Clark with Randall in that triangle. But to make all of that work, the space to get in, it's not a coincidence those wingers could end up scoring 15 to 20 goals each because of selfless number nine. And yes, could he be a better finisher and could he score a lot more? And has he missed chances and all those? Of course he has, but he's a young striker. They're going to do that. But if he ends the season with, you know, 15 odd goals for his first campaign playing as number nine, and his partners around him have all done very well, I think they owe him a lot of gratitude. And he really is a thankless hero for the work he does. I mean, I thought he was man of the match last night, even though he didn't get those highlights from everyone off the pitch. If he didn't play last night, I'm not sure that's 5-1. And the good news is, with a young player, the things like goals will follow. What he's not doing at the moment is getting lucky. Nothing goes in off his arse. You know, that one fell to Joel Randall 3 yards out. He very rare does that happen with Ricky. Do you know what I mean? So, but that will come. And I think you'll see the best of him when he goes to the next club, which will be a bigger club than us. And then people will go, you're right there. You know? So, because, you know, I think with how he's doing and what he's doing and whatever else, you know, there's going to be people always want pressing strikers. Certainly with the new style of football playing out from the back in a certain way nowadays. He is that, nothing like him. It'll be really difficult to replace him. Trust me, we try and do lists for replacing all our players, wide players, wingers, central midfielders, strikers. It's the one thing we haven't solved the conundrum on as regards to if we have to do something next summer or whatever else, like who slots. Malik's a good player, full preseason. He's going to be, I'm not sure he's ever going to press like Ricky. I'd like him to. I think he could. But then again, 99% of strikers don't press like that. So they just can't run 12, 13K a game at high intensity. It's just physically impossible for a lot. But he's going to be a player, Matic. But yeah, Ricky, and again, I want to give him credit because not a lot of other people do. And I think if our fans and the ones who maybe aren't keen on him got behind him like they did with Joel Randle. Joel Randle was written off last summer. Joel Randle's been one of our best players, one of the most productive players in League One. If you watch how he plays, and in the big games as well, Derby away, and you see the space and the things he does, Blackpool and that 3-0 win recently. If some of our fans started got behind Ricky in that way, cult-like way they did with Joel with the whole goals, Joel, you know, and that really, that whole thing gave Joel a lift. I know that because he's a confidence boy. I think, you know, you might see a completely different Ricky J. Jones as regards to just that full support. And by the way, the mass majority are behind him. But I do know he struggles with some of the criticism at times. And I don't want Alan Swan doing a big article about Ricky Reid's social media, but he's a young boy.
And there's some pretty vocal, there's a vocal minority.
You've seen it, right?
Yeah.
You've seen it. I don't even need to show it to you. So yeah. You've seen it, you know. There was one guy last night, and I saw a comment, one of our, you know, John Varell, who's a good supporter and, you know, he's in the media. He always defends Ricky, in fairness. Mm-hmm. And I think he'd put up something nice. And straight away, there's this guy's at an airport going on about, well, how many goals did he score and And I'm like, God almighty, is this guy got like a son? Like, you know, I get it. You're allowed to have an opinion. I get it. You know, it's not my right to tell you what to think. But at the same time, we've just demolished our rivals 5-1. He's arguably being probably man of the match for what he did. Ask their manager, would you like them in their team? I don't think our back four would like him running against them. Ronnie Edwards and fucking Josh Knight wouldn't have 20 minutes to pass the ball if he was fucking playing against them. Do you know what I mean? So I just, I'd love that to happen for the next couple of months. Just lay off and let him do his thing. I think he'd end up having a brilliant season. And then you build from there. But listen, that was last night. It was back to our best. It was free-flowing. Could have been 8, 9, 10. We got a chance to take off a lot of players, rest players. You know, Hector got a 7 to the season. Joel's up to 8. Should be double that. And he will hopefully score more. Efron's got his 18th. I think Kwame's in the double figures. You know, Archie Collins is the unsung hero. I see a lot of stuff on Twitter about the best players in League One and stats and whatever else. And none of those morons are watching fucking Peterborough play because he's the quarterback. He's like the Tom Brady of the Peterborough side. He just, everything is just like, me and the manager were having a chat earlier while I was in the pool and talking about summer and next year and going, you know, fucking hell. How is he still in League One, by the way? Forget about us signing him. He should have been gone at like 21, 22. Premier League team should have been looking at him, buying him because of the way he plays and the way Premier League team plays, you know? So the one to a man, and then a special mention because, you know, I got a lot of stick in particular that we didn't sign a right back and we lost PK and blah, blah, blah. And the reason we weren't winning was because of a right back. Jadel Katonga is going to be a top, top player.
He got assists for the first two goals, didn't he, last night?
Yeah. He's understanding and learning a role. He's 19. And he's playing with Kwame now. Kwame or him are building an understanding. And he is going to be, Man City, you've got a player. Whether he's a centre-back, right-back, he could play midfield. He's going to be a hell of a player. By the way, we have a player like that in our building who's also a youngster called James Donnelly, who's had bone bruising, but he's now back running. And what excites me about that is we have one of them.
Yeah.
Donnelly could play right back, right wing back. He's played central midfield this season. It's not just the technical side. You know, when you see a player who's as cool as you like, could mm-hmm. smoke a cigar.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw Donnelly take a penalty shootout at 17, I forget it was an FA Cup game or whatever, and just put it in the top corner. When I see a player like that slotting into midfield, you know, Katanga's done that this season. James Donnelly's that player we've got in our ranks. So they're the things we get excited about, you know what I mean? And, no, look, for me, you know, it's a long way to go. It's 11 games plus whatever, plus a cup game. And I just think, you know, yeah, we've lost games of football. We've played some brilliant football. Like I said, this season was all about creating a style, creating an identity, you know, really developing our own players. You know, I said to Baz earlier, and this is an interesting thing for you. If you look at our strongest 11 most of the time when they're fully fit, like last night and whatever else, 8 out of that starting 11 were worth our club last year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those 8 players weren't always playing.
There's a change in style.
Right. Some people think we've had this big rebuild.
Yeah.
But if you go by most of our strongest 11 all season, 8 out of the 11 of them were with us last year. That's not a rebuild. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I said, a retooling. You know, playing to the way those players play, playing to the, you know, because they were young, giving them that opportunity, getting rid of the moaning experienced players who'd stopped them playing with freedom and fucking criticism, you know, doing all those things were important. And again, it goes to show you, sometimes you harp for what's outside your building. Yeah. Like our player, yeah, we need a right back, and oh, we need a striker in the summer, we need a number nine, and oh my God, you know, how are we going to replace Norburn? And oh my God, and da, 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 da. But sometimes you have it inside your building, and sometimes you have to back what's in your building already and let them flourish. It's not always about replacing. Sometimes, you know, as long as they're still in contract and with you, it's what's in your building.
So talking about that tactical flexibility then, so Darren has obviously been flexible in terms of, okay, looking at what you've got and building around that. Do most managers take that more pragmatic approach these days, or do you still find managers who are very stuck in, this is the formation that I play, and if I can't play that formation, you know, I'm going to try and put a lot of square pegs in round holes?
It's my favorite saying, because I hate when managers do that. Mm-hmm. I think in defense of other managers who might want to play like that but can't play like that, a lot of them don't have luxury of time to get across that process. They don't have the transfer budget to go out and spend $500,000 on Archie Collins, who might be a big part of that.
Yeah.
So, and obviously a lot of the players in the eight I've mentioned, of course, there's money. We spent money on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's different. If we went out and signed 12 waifs and strafes and free transfers or whatever else, and suddenly we're playing champagne football, you're like, oh my God almighty. You'd be saying, you know, the gaffer's like Pep Guardiola or someone else, or Mourinho back in Portugal. I think so. Yeah, I think, you know, in defense, well, I'd say about my manager, he knows what he's doing. Him and his coaches are very good at what they do. They have a certain way they want to play. I think they realize that as we put the pieces together, that we had a strong nucleus, but then you had to go and get an Archie in there. You had to go and get, you know, a good right back that could, you know, move you up and down the pitch. And then look at your strengths. What are our strengths? You know, our wingers, you know, our passing center backs. Okay, so let's change everything we're doing to play to their strengths. If we can slow build up from the back and drag people in, and we can get our wingers up that pitch in space, we're untouchable.
Yeah.
And that's it, really. Get those boys in space, unplayable. And then you got Randall and Ricky pressing, unplayable. And you can do that at a high intensity, we're going to win a lot of football games. But the other side of that is, when we were losing the games recently, we lost four in a row or whatever it was, I remember saying to the manager, I rang him after the fourth loss, and I said, hey, we have to own this. Like, you know, we went this way. So me and you own this. Because the reality of a young team, you put a young team together, is you're not going to win every game, and there are going to be spells things aren't going well. So that's on us, and we're okay with it being on us. But we have to also let the players know it's okay.
Yeah, you got to protect them.
Yeah, yeah, we put it together. So, but we're okay with that. And the great news is our fans are okay with it too. Because even when you've had a rocky patch, your fans, 99% of them, have stuck with it because we've shown them and told them all along, this is what we're doing. So nobody was thinking we're going to be winning the league by fucking January in year one of this project. You know, but at the end of the day, that's it. Just take ownership of it and just say, hey, you know, we had a few bad results. We got tanked. You know, Wickham gave us a good scene too. You know, shit happens. Probably the only time we deserved a good scene too this season, and particularly in that run, was Wickham, where we suddenly went back to 1999 and played a target man and, you know, different formation. And that kind of sobered us up to, no, that can't happen again. Like, we moved on.
It's got to be encouraging, the momentum's back. Because while you always would say, and did say when you were on that losing run, that, you know, just wait until March comes and, you know, I'm hopeful, you still, there's probably something in the back of your head that wonders, you know, was that the end of our momentum? And you've really just brought that back. You've been playing really well the last two or three games. And
I'll tell you right now, I don't think we played brilliant Saturday, but there were signs that we could dig in and win. I thought we played okay against Cambridge, very good against Blackpool. I never for once thought it wasn't going to come back, because I know how good the players are. You know, confidence, of course, is very important. And momentum is one of those words, whether you're losing, winning or whatever, you know. Look, at the end of the day, you put your thing out there, how you want to do it. Then you let it take shape. It's down to the players. Win, lose or draw. It always is. At the end of the day, you have to give them a platform. And I know this is true. You keep them fit, touch wood. You don't go crazy and steer off course on what you want to do. They play at that kind of intensity and belief. They'll do okay and have a great end to the season. You know, we always knew that. You know, there's a lot of games to come, whether it's automatics, whether it's chasing the playoffs, whatever it might be. And we're going to have a lot of fun doing it as well. And that was a key part of it as well. I want my players to have fun. I want my players to play football that is beyond this level, that they can see that they can play a lot higher. Because every player we want to bring in isn't a player for League One. It's a player where they can go on and do better, higher, 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 and at a young age as well. So you know, all of this is down to the players. Most importantly, it's down to the manager and the staff for getting them back out of them. That big game against Blackpool, where you're like four losses in a row. You get dumped out of the cup. Now the natives are going to be restless. Now they're going to turn on this young team. That young team could have gone on the right there, but they didn't. And that, and I think that's important. So anyway, enough about Peterborough.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, I saw your frustration on Twitter because you haven't played a lot. So give me the juice. What's going on?
Yeah, so we had Barrow. So we were supposed to, I think since we last recorded, we were supposed to play Barrow and then Notts County. And then we played Doncaster last night. So Barrow got called off at the last minute for, I think we're all kind of still trying to figure out why. You know, it was supposedly a waterlogged pitch, but it was one of those where there really was no, there was one little part of, you know, the penalty area where the ball didn't maybe bounce a little bit. You know, and I don't know whether it was an inexperienced ref or what it was. Both teams wanted the game on. You know, Barrow's, even though it's up north, it's still a good two and a half hours from anywhere, pretty much. So, you know, you had 1,000 sell-out away fans up there, and they called it off at probably 2 o'clock. And then Barrow had a training session on it straight afterwards. As soon as it got called off, it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with the pitch, so let's...
Clever.
They actually were going to do... I think they asked us if we wanted to do a friendly.
Very good.
Because, you know, nobody felt that there was any problems with the pitch, and just have like an open session and the fans can still come in and, you know, we'll give everyone their money back and at least people can come and see some football.
Yeah, sell some drinks and whatever else, you know, getting busy. Yeah, good idea.
So that was that one. And then next was Notts County at Valley Parade. And the Valley Parade pitch, as was shown against Wickham on TV, you know, for the
makes our pitch look like Wembley.
It does.
Makes the Peterborough pitch look like Wembley. By the way, our pitch was excellent last night. Mm-hmm. You know, excellent. So we get into pitches, so carry on.
Yeah, and so that was one of those where it just can't hold any water. So the game was on because it hadn't rained, and then all of a sudden there was no pitch inspection. And then all of a sudden, you know, Saturday morning, late Saturday morning, early into Saturday afternoon, big downpour, nowhere for the water to go. And so that was a pretty last minute postponement as well.
You're going to be playing till June.
And that's the worry. You know, you have a pitch like that that is in so much trouble. You know, how can you play seven, now six after yesterday? But we've got six more home games on that this season.
Yeah.
And you got to hope for some good weather to be able to get through that, because, you know, if the referee for the Barrow game would have been the referee last night, then he'd have called it off, you know, 24 hours before the match.
Oh no. How did you play last night?
It was tough. It was one of those games where horrible pitch, horrible officials, and everything was stop start. We'd lost our momentum with the postponed games because we were on a good run up until then. And we had Richie Smallwood was suspended. We put Clark Adore, who's been playing, you know, more of a free role into centre midfield. It didn't work.
So he's not a centre midfielder. Not a chance.
And so that just stifled any creativity or any. It was just a really bad, scrappy game. And nobody was, you know, the referee was just booking everybody for breathing, basically.
And I did see your tweets about that, Jeff. Yeah. You're going to get hard truth in trouble with the FA soon.
I know. That's why I can say that and you can't.
Yeah. Well, I'm on a 20 grand suspended fine, so don't be getting me fined, you bastard.
As long as they don't come after me with a 20 grand fine.
No. That's a shared fine if we end up getting fined. So, okay. So where are you now in the grand scheme of things? How many games you got in hand and how many points are you off?
So we got one or two in hand, which, you know, last time we spoke, we were 2 points off the playoffs, but most of the teams had games that we played more than most of the teams around us.
Right.
So now we have one or two in hand and we are 7 off the playoffs.
Okay.
So, you know, Walsall have been on a really good run. They've got into that last playoff spot at the moment.
Morecambe as well.
Yeah, Markham are up to 8th now. They had a couple of wins in a row. Crawley have been climbing back up there, but it's still anybody's. But draws at home to Doncaster is probably not going to help you that much.
No, you've got to beat teams obviously down there. So you need wins. Let's talk pitches, because it's a big conversation about pitches. And I saw your tweets about you've obviously got bigger problems than us to do with the ownership and having to restore the stadium and all those things and the position of the stadium and, you know, do you move? Do you do this? Do you do that? That's a conversation, obviously, for Bradford and their owners. You know, if I own Bradford, you'd be like, that carried on. I'm putting in a expensive pitch, so I want to move.
I got to be honest with you, you know, and this is for a long, long time, we've all resisted the idea of moving, you know, on sentimental grounds for obvious reasons.
Can't stop progress.
This last weekend was the first time I really thought, you know what, if as a football club, even as a city, you look at Bradford Bulls as well in the rugby, same problems, playing in an awful, awful stadium, you know, no crowds anymore, no money. They've really dropped down kind of the rugby league system. The best thing for the city of Bradford is to figure out a way to fund
state-of-the-art sports arena. Yeah, right. For all sports. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's amazing. You know, I have my own problems, obviously, at Peterborough and all of that, but trying to get through to local authorities, you know, we were talking about Vegas. You're going to Vegas on a work trip, and you've obviously got all your favorite Democrats and progressives who don't like public funding going into sports stadium, da da da. But there was a great article I read about, you know, every socialist always goes on about, we don't want, you know, funding and this and that. And, you know, we'd rather bribe voters to vote for us instead. So we're going to give away free healthcare and free college tuition. But as a capitalist, I was looking at it the other way. And the guy who runs Vegas, whoever he is, he's like Nevada director of sports. He's a capitalist, obviously. And they looked at bringing in an NFL team, the hockey team. You're going to have an MLS team. You're going to have a basketball team. You've seen all the arenas being built. They're already, the city is bringing in billions of extra revenue to the economy, billions in jobs. These are all things good for the economy. And within 5 years, it will be a surplus profit on all the money they've, you know, they put a billion into the NFL. They put, I think, a billion into the basketball team. This is money that you as a local government can borrow anywhere, cheap interest rates usually from the government.
Just do some bonds or something as well.
It's only upside. It's only upside. Bradford City having 30,000 fans in the championship in a brand new stadium in the city every week, rugby team playing on a Sunday, you playing on a Saturday, that would pay for itself in 5 years.
Yeah.
For the local authority. Even if it was a 70, 80 million pound stadium, it would pay for itself with the ancillary revenue brought in for the businesses and the employment and everything else. So again, like I said about Peterborough, we did a study and it showed, I think it was 400 million over 15 years, we would produce an income for the city of Peterborough. 400 million. Like, are you joking me? Can anybody put 70 million pound stadium raising money?
Four plus for X return on your investment.
Yeah. You know, so for all those people worried about, you know, government funding and spending and whatever else, well, you know, do you want that kind of, do you want your city to prosper? And sports make cities prosper. So let's talk pitches.
Yeah.
Our current pitch guys, who we pay a big fee to manage all our pitches, have had a lot of criticism about our pitch, which is really unfair because they only came in, I think, the end of November, start of December. A lot of these issues aren't their issues as the previous. And we paid a lot of money to previous. Not only get into all of that, because what's the point, tit for tat? But I will defend the current guys that they have worked their nuts off to do as best they can with. It's almost like asking a top chef to prepare a top meal and giving them an onion and a tomato, you know. And they've done. Our pitch last night was in much better condition. It might not look pretty because they've shaved it right down. I think they took six whatever inches off the grass, but it certainly didn't bother. It's now at the stage where the sun's on it, and we can now get it to a stage where we can play. But they've done an incredible job. They went out and got us quotes on Deso pitches, Deso for the stadium, and particularly one for the training ground. I'm not overly fussed about the training ground one, because as a League One team, you know, to have a Deso pitch at your training ground is like having a Rolls Royce in the car park of your council home.
And for somebody who doesn't know what a Deso pitch is, what's a Deso pitch?
Well, I'll let people like Google it, but it's obviously a special synthetic surface and pitch, which lasts, you know, 10 years. Believe it or not, we spoke to Wickham. They had one put in 15 years ago and they still have it.
Yeah.
And we played them recently and 14 we lost, and it's still going strong after 15 years. Yeah. Usually you get a 10-year guarantee. Mm-hmm. It's something to do with the fiber, the grass, synthetics and everything else. But what it is it's you don't have the issues we've had. You don't have the issues you've had. Yes, drainage is part of it and an important part of it. We don't have drainage issues at ours. We just had a pitch that, you know, we had a mixed-up pitch, which is a different type, like a carpet. Mm-hmm. And it only lasted, it was meant to last 7 years, 5 to 7, they say, but it pretty much checked out after 5 years. And yes, the weather's been horrific. And yes, there's been, you know, water and this, that, whatever. And too many games may be played on it back to back. And then, you know, you can lose it. But our pitch should never have been in this condition. Certainly at the start of the season, I said to you, we spent more this year on pitches at the training ground and particularly on irrigation at the training ground. I spent 160 grand on irrigation for one of the mixed-up pitches we had there. And we invested like nearly 700 grand in those two pitches between the two over 5 years. So we had the quote last week when I got here to Dubai for like Deso pitch, whatever else, whatever. And it's an external company. Our pitch people have gone out and got these quotes for us and whatever else. Well, fuck me, that's not cheap. So I saw the quote and I'm like, on the second day of my holiday, I was shouting and screaming going, what the fuck? Because a big part for me was I would look at doing two pitches, one at the stadium, one at the training, but they need to be able to finance it. Like, to be fair to Mixto, did the previous pitches, which lasted, you know, the 5 years. They allowed me pay for it over 5 years.
Yeah.
On top of then managing the pitch.
Yeah.
So the quotes were like heavy. It was like nearly 1.3 million.
Wow.
For two pitches. And I just went back and said, look, you know, first of all, training ground one's gone. You know, we'll have to do something else there and whatever. As much as you want your training ground to be, you know, bells and whistles. And then the main stadium one, look, you know, we need another option, another plan, you know, because we don't know if we're going to be in a championship. You don't, you know, for a club that loses millions every year, you know, to be sticking out 600-700 grand on pitches and all the bits that go with it up front, you know, those things are, you know, we're going to be doing a shop, we're doing a restaurant. So you can't, as much as your pitch has to be, and I don't want posh fans freaking out here because I will find a solution and we will resolve it. But it's an expensive amount of money. And this is what I talk about the EFL and having that slush fund to help clubs like Bradford and Peterborough. When I say help, we would pay back with interest.
Yeah, so it's just allow you to finance it over, or amortize it over its natural life rather than pay up front.
Correct. You know what I mean? So we're getting to the stage next 7 days where I'm going to press the button on one of the, I'm getting options sent to me all the time. But again, I just wanted to defend our current guys that, you know, they're actually doing a really, really good job and they're working their arses off to try it. Like they're working night and day. Mm-hmm. And, they, you know, because I've seen people tweet in from other pitch companies, you know, and sometimes it's unfair. Some of the crap that comes up on Twitter and stuff. And you're like, come on. Like, come on. One guy who used to work for us is like really predominant on there. And it's just dig, 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 dig. So, you know, that's not fair either. Yeah, everyone's a fucking expert till they're not.
That's what I said before we started recording that everyone's turned from being experts in tactical formations to being a horticulturalist. And that's kind
of our episode. It's perfect.
And that's what was frustrating to me over the weekend. Like, the pitch is awful. There's no getting around the fact it's an awful pitch. And I know that people will say, well, I defend the football club too much. But there's only so much.
You are a bit of an arse licker.
There you go. There's only so much you can do when you think about it from a business perspective. You know, you're in a stadium that you don't own, that the rent expires in 2 or 3 years. So the fundamental problems with the pitch are really based on the fact that there is no drainage. The pitch is basically built on a bed of carpet, on a bed of concrete. And so to get real drainage, you need to excavate all this concrete from underneath the pitch, which, you know, is a huge job and a very expensive job. And can you do that in 6 weeks of an off season, of preseason? So there's such fundamental problems with the pitch that then get, you know, compounded upon by weather. And I think that for us, you talk about the natural cycles of the pitch. I think that we're probably 2 or 3 years into this. And so the pitch hasn't lasted as long as it should. And all these things all happening at the same time conspire to be just a difficult situation.
So I would
not
say
one that's easy to get out of.
So the owner doesn't want to put money into the club. I understand that. Mm-hmm. He sustainably runs it. It washes his face. You know, we all wish we were in that position. So the flip to that is if you're going to do that, you have to make sure the things like your stadium, your training ground, all those things are like fit for purpose. You know, like in our defense of Peterborough, we spent 2 million on the dome. We spent 750 on the 3G pitch. We spent over 600 grand on mixed up pitches at the training ground. You know, we must have spent near on 4 million quid on the training ground in the last 7-8 years. So that's infrastructure expense. At the stadium, obviously, we've done, you know, the safe standing. We've obviously put money into the mixed up pitch there. We've done other bits. We're about to do a 500 grand mega store. You know, you have to, at some stage, if you're not doing it on the pitch, you have to be able to say, well, hang on, I'm giving you a great stadium. I'm giving you great facilities. I'm giving you all the things. We're going to run this by our academy. And by the way, the pitch is like Wembley for our academy. So, you know, they're all the things. So that is an owner problem. And if I had that problem at Bradford, I'd do my best to try and move the club, have something in writing that we can move the club, and then go to the owner of the stadium and say, hey, do a deal, because this place got a covenant on it that, you know, can't go anywhere unless we agree, and you won't be able to sell it for houses. So do a deal.
Yeah, well, right now we just Band-Aid everything.
And that's Band-Aid everything. And if it costs him £1 million to put a new pitch and take out that concrete and fix the irrigation, because it's not just putting a deso pitch in, you're talking about irrigation, that's going to be more money. So let's say it costs £1 million. He's going to have to do that, because if you keep losing games, peak games with 20,000, never mind what it's like with us losing games in 7,000-8,000 crowds. If you're doing it in 20,000 crowds and 20-odd, you know, you start adding up 4 or 5 of those missed Saturdays, you know, in a season, you know, you're in within 5 years, you're probably near enough £500,000. So you may as well try and get a solution. Yeah,
even that Notts County game, you know, you probably go from 50, the way that attendances we've been getting, you know, have been lower because I think people are getting a little bit disillusioned. But let's say it's Saturday afternoon kickoff, Notts County, they probably fill out their allocation. You probably get 17 to 19,000. Now it's on a Tuesday night, you know, it's on iFollow. So a lot of the fans who would ordinarily come are going to stay at home and watch it on iFollow, and you're probably going to get 10 to 12,000 in there, you know. So yeah, you're losing.
You're losing, though. Yeah. You're losing, though.
That's just one game.
Dough. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, enough about pitches, enough about Bradford, enough about Peterborough. What else is going on in the football world?
What else is going on? I laugh because we always talk about Gary Monk's agents, and Gary Monk's agent has got him a job at Cambridge since we last spoke.
Hey, well, he's a miracle worker, that guy. So, listen, I've given Gary Monk a going over, you know, only because, again, I saw it on Sky the other day, the clubs he'd been at. I mean, he's had some of the best clubs I've ever seen on a manager's CV. And I probably speak from a defensive point of view of my manager, who's, you know, 5 times more successful and hasn't even had one of those clubs on a CV, you know, when I see some of the clubs he's had in his CV. So, good luck for them. Who might tell Cambridge to hire? They seem to have got it right with all their previous guys. They've made a few quid out of, you know, obviously Neil Harris has gone on to Millwall. They would have got compensated. Good luck to Gary Monk. I hope we never played him again. Mm-hmm. That means we'll have gone up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, so, yeah, what else?
I don't know if you saw while you're away on holiday the international rights deal that the EFL agreed over the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah. So Dawn was keeping me posting the vote.
Yeah, £148 million international rights deal. Any thoughts on that?
Do you know what's on my to-do list? I've never been political. I've never been bureaucratic. But you know what old D-Mac's going to do? Because I talk a good game, so I've got to get in the game. So what I'm going to start doing, once I get a lot of the stuff I've got to get sorted out of posh over the next few months, I'm going to start getting a bit more involved with the EFL. And by the way, good deal, well done. Anything with that kind of, you know, deal that goes up percentage-wise. But, you know, with TV deals, with this new Premier League conversation that's gone on a while, for me, there's so many key things here. There's the TV deals. There's the overseas rights. There's our brand. I've always said this, the way we portray ourselves through the TV companies that we do deals with, which is fucking terrible. You know, when you watch those productions are like...
It's second-class citizens, isn't it?
It's terrible. You know, to the loan issues going on with loan players, I've always spoken about with the Premier League, with the power vacuum, with rules around financial fair play, where any new deal that gets done, the players will end up with most of the fucking money, with rules around clubs that get in trouble, and clubs who do things the right way and not getting rewarded, you know, right down to the way the deal's done, where 12% to League One, 8% to League Two, and maximum amount percent of the Championship. All these little things. I was thinking the other day, because I'm a big NFL fan, and I read a lot of books, and the way the 32 NFL owners basically run, even though they have a commissioner, the way they run the NFL, the things they do, the deals they do with like the PFA version of the NFL players, the TV deals, they have a committee of owners, 4 or 5 of them, who basically run the whole TV rights deals. And then they have staff that work for the NFL who go and execute those deals. But that ownership committee deal with CBS, they deal with YouTube, they deal with, you know, the big overseas. The way they've expanded, I'm not saying we're the NFL, by the way, but the way they've expanded that product, where every club in the NFL is a wealthy club, it's appreciating in price. A lot of them have got new stadiums that have been financed by ownership putting money together for them. The players are protected now more with injuries, insurance, all the. It's just so well run and operated. It's a great model. And we always spoke about EFL Plus and having, you know, you've got NFL. NFL don't do that. They've got a version of that with the NFL app, and they keep a certain amount of games. They sell a Sunday ticket. But because they bring in, I don't know, is it 30 billion a year? I was reading the other day. But and they've done deals for the next 10 years, but we still haven't sampled that. You know, I'd like to get in the lab and start looking at things, and I'd like to, I'm not sure Rick Parry and Cole love me, you know, wanting to get involved, but because I'm quite a prickly guy, and I suppose they think, oh, here we go, and you know, this guy. But I think with my 18 years experience, I'd like to start getting a bit more involved. I'd like to start throwing in ideas. I'd like to be a help, not a hindrance, an asset. And I think more owners need to be assets.
You would think that there's benefit in that for the, because at the end of the day, and I'm talking about all owners, to be able to own a football club, an EFL club, you've been successful in your business in some way, shape, or form, and so have a lot of
course.
Experience.
Of course, my background is sales and marketing.
Right, there's so much experience that exists out there amongst ownership that it feels foolish not to figure out a way to try and channel that for the betterment of the whole game.
Do you know the real problem is? Each league has its own like representative, which is a CEO of like, I think Fleetwood's in League One for us, and you got whatever else, but it's always a CEO. It's always somebody who's not actually an owner of a club. I honestly think, you know, the NFL have owners meetings every year. We have an EFL meeting where you've got all the directors come and 90% of the owners don't come. I'd like to set something up where all 72 owners actually sit in a fucking room once a year, you know, and you start throwing out, you know, people who have this problem. You know, the Premier League have an owners meeting every year. We, you know, for me, I think these are things where we have to execute, and things can't be executed, because if you're coming up with ideas and you're pitching them to a CEO, then it's to ring somebody overseas and da-da-da-da-da. There has to be a simpler way of doing this, you know, so these are things I want to get my teeth into, and I was thinking the other night, like, we have all these TV deals that get done, and all the money goes to the champ, and money goes to League One and League Two and whatever else. You've got clubs who are cheating the system, who keep getting fine points, who keep getting financial fines. They got foreign owners, but they get the same amount of money as somebody in League One, like Exeter, who run things properly and pay all their bills and don't have a surplus deficit, don't have debts, don't have issues. Maybe it should be the other way around. Maybe you should be paying more to people who actually do things the right way. I'm not saying all of it, but maybe there should be a bonus for clubs who actually are sustainable.
It makes me think, and I talk about this from a part of half ignorance, but what Rugby League has tried to do, which has been very controversial, in giving points, essentially, or giving kind of merit points that can actually play into promotion relegation based on all these different things.
No. Forget merit points and all that, because I think you need to win promotions on the field. You know, I think that is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So say a typical League One club gets £1 million in TV money, you know. Well, maybe the club who pays its bills and does well the following year gets 1.1. And the club who doesn't pay its bills the following year and has had problems and deductions gets £900,000.
Yeah, play people from your academy for a certain number of games throughout a season gets you money.
Again, that's sporting. I'm trying to decide it based on
we're
having a real problem.
Infrastructure.
We're having a real problem. Yeah, we're having a real problem in football with, you know, you've seen the Reading saga play out. You've seen other sagas play out. The only thing those people really know is financial punishment. That's the only way that you truly like. And what I'm saying is, you've got clubs like Exeter and clubs like that, Crew, you know, who basically doing things the right way, you know. And by the way, I'm not innocent in this, because we overspend and we have debts and whatever. I'm talking about clubs who do things the right way, and a lot of the time they end up relegated or they end up whatever else. Like, you know, I saw a chart the other day where we were the only club I think who broke even in the Championship, and of course we were relegated. Everyone else has lost 10 million and 30 million and 20 million and whatever else. You know, I don't know. Maybe our reward for that should have been, you know what, Peterborough are going to get an extra £2 million next year as part of the relegation, because they did things in the right way. They stayed within the lines, as opposed to the club that went down with them, maybe that lost fucking 18 million or 20 million. Do you get what I mean? So that's just one of the things. I'm talking about more involvement from owners to do with the TV deals, more involved. And some of those committees go on already, but I just have never really got involved and whatever. I don't want to step on toes, but what I want to be is an asset, not a liability. And I think there's a lot of intelligent people working in the football world who could be assets, not liabilities, that own these football clubs. That's what I'm talking about.
I read an article this morning in The Athletic about Blackburn and the Venkies.
Read that, and I thought it was very harsh, that article. Mm-hmm. You know, I read that article, and I saw the guy tweet about it. And I thought to myself, have the Venkies ever missed a payday?
Right.
Have the Venkies ever got in? Have they? I'm asking you, Phil, because I didn't do my research.
Not that I'm aware of.
Have they gotten financial? Have they been fined for financially breaking fair play rules?
No, I mean, they actually talked about the fact they just keep on pumping money in and pumping money in. They keep on funding the club. Now, that might be not to be the levels that supporters might want if they think they're going to have a shot at the Premier League, but they're continuing to fund all the liabilities and the debts of the club without question.
So I'm not here to defend the Venkies, because the Blackburn fans will not like them or whatever else. But what I will say about them, like I've said before about other people who aren't not so popular, including your owner, is they've always paid their bills. They've paid them on time. We've never had a problem getting transfer fees off them when we were out and we've done business. They've never had a financial penalty. They've never had points deducted, I don't believe. I apologize if I've got all of this wrong, but from my own bit of research, I don't think they've ever gone outside the lines. Have they done silly things maybe that they regret? Of course, every owner does. But all I know is that they put a tremendous amount of money in every year. I know Steve, who runs it, runs a really tight ship there, the CEO. They're, you know, very well-run football club. They've just sold an academy player for 18 million. I don't think, you know, sticking an article up, which kind of, the idea of the article and the tweet I saw was like to say, oh, what if the Venkies can't get their money out? What if this happens? What if that happens? Again, it's salacious in my opinion. It's a bit like what the Athletic did with us. Everything's always fucking salacious. But I'm reading about a club that's actually been well run financially, regardless of all the problems in India that the Venkies have. They've actually been a pretty well-run football club. And in the last few years, they've done okay in the Championship. They've had a bit of a shit season this year. And the Athletic will argue, well, that's because they didn't get the money over for the budget this summer. Well, I'd argue, well, they got enough money over to pay the bills. All their staff were paid. All their players were paid. They were never, ever in trouble financially. You know, so again, I'm not sure that's the football club that needs it. I could be wrong. I apologize. But again, I just saw it as maybe too salacious.
Does the, you know, in the article talked about how much money the Venkies are having to spend every year, and then likened it to, you know, the same for teams like Preston. And you talked about looking at the chart, which showed that you were the only club that made a profit in that season. Does this mean the Championship's becoming less attractive as a proposition? Or that, I think back to us, you know, we were 5 minutes away from extra time in the Championship playoff final, probably how many years ago now, 6 or 7 years ago, when our new owners came in and bought the club. They bought the club because our old owner said, we can no longer, if we got promoted, we couldn't fund it. And so we need somebody who can. And that was kind of the case to bring in new ownership. So with all that said, it makes it, you aspire to play as high as you can, but how realistic is Championship football when you get there if it's so expensive to just, you know,
some of the figures I've seen in there and some of the losses were horrific, and they're far too much for a club. It's for a league outside the Premier League, that has to change. When I see some of the clubs lost 30, 40 million, I mean, it's fucking, some of the figures are just crazy. You know, I would say acceptable is 3 or 4 million, you know, up to 5 million losing every year. I mean, look, in League One, we're going to lose a few million this year, which is weird because it'll be more than we lost in the champ. But, you know, that was to do with adapting and what you don't want to do when you're a club coming up. If you go crazy, that breaking even would have turned into a 10 million quid loss the following year for us in League One, which would have been catastrophic because you don't have the Championship income. So it's a bit difficult in that way. But look, I think we all know the face of finances has to change in football and the way we operate and the way we police ourselves as well. I think a lot of good changes can be made. I think a lot of prudent changes can be made. But most importantly, I think with better marketing and sales for our product and our production of our product, I think we can ramp up the money we bring in. Because let's be honest with you, those clubs losing 10 and 20 million, if they had an extra 8 million brought in, and it was capped that they couldn't spend more than what they're already losing, the losses wouldn't be as catastrophic. And I do believe our product would be worth that in a few years' time.
Yeah, it's, you look at where the money goes, and most of the money goes on wages. So until that's ever addressed.
Agents and wages, not facilities, not fan prices. It's wages and agents. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, like we froze our ticket prices for season tickets again because it was part of our post-COVID three-year freeze thing. But if you look at the cost of running the club in the last 3 years since those freezes have gone in, it's our electricity, everything, the cost of security, staff, everything's gone through the roof. Like, don't be shocked if there's a 30% price increase next year, Posh fans. I'm only joking about 30%. But, the point
is, that's how much it costs you extra to run the club.
Minimum, Phil. I was going through this all yesterday. Yeah. And players' wages haven't gone down either. They keep going up. You know, so unless we get a lid on this, unless we do things properly, unless we sit down with a PFA, you know, we tried to do the whole wage cap a couple of years ago, unless there's common sense provided, you're going to have thousands of unemployed footballers. So, you know, there has to be some sense of sustainability to the conversation. And I think I'd like to have that conversation with people from the PFA.
Wages are ultimately set by clubs. Wage inflation, therefore, is kind of a responsibility of clubs to keep under control. But while there's somebody who's going to set the market for a certain level of talent at a certain cost, everyone else is then playing catch up, and it's like created this vicious circle, or vicious cycle. It's going to be really hard to get out of, but that's ultimately
100%
driving all this, all the unprofitability of these football clubs is purely based on the wages. And
as and you always have a choice to say no, by the way. Yeah. Like, you know, I can give an example of the last summer when we were always looking at PK to write back, but we had other options in case we couldn't do the deal. So we were looking at one point, we thought we weren't going to get PK. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to get another right back in, you know, and we had a budget for right back. And by the way, this might not be the figure. I'm just throwing out a figure. Let's say our budget for that position was $3,000 a week, as an example. And we were competing for a very competent right back who had League One experience. So we offer a 3-year deal. And then another club comes in that has a bigger crowd base and offers them 4.5. So straight away, there's two of us in there. One of us is at 3. The other club's paid 50% more. That player is probably going to end up getting relegated, by the way, from League One. Yeah. So my point is, did the other club have to go 50% over? Or what about an argument where we as a collective and owners say, well, we're both in for the same player. You know, we're capped on what we can spend. You know, let the player decide based off the project just on the same money. Because I think if it was the same money, he would have chosen our project based on the way we do things and play and, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, sometimes football can be daft, and an agent's done what's best for his client. He's got 50% more money. And, you know, in all honesty, he would have taken, and the worst thing was he was agreeing to come to us on 3.
Yeah. Well, that agent,
the club paying more.
Yeah. Well, that agent probably went to the other club and said, hey, I've got a 4.5 offer or a 4.2 offer on the table. If you go to 4.5, I think you can get him.
Yeah.
And so he's using, you know, the leverage and probably, and I'm not saying this agent in particular, but, you know, knowing how business works, ethics of in negotiation is a big challenge.
Yeah. And I've learned this year we walk away. Like, I'm not going to be bullied, you know, because we you know, financially we have to clean up our acts. So I was like, I'm not overspending. I'm not going to be bullied. In January, we had another right back again that we'd done a deal. They were on their way. And then two things happened. One, we found out from a physio that player was definitely not for us because of issues they had at the previous club. And in the meantime, the agent, he'd agreed to come to us on, I think it was $2,000 a week. And the agent swung him to another club who, for some reason, loves, you know, the players we sign. And that club offered him 4 a week. And they didn't need to. They could have got him for $2,200 a week. So again, is that good financial management? Is that good business from a, you know, if I was to tell an owner of that club, listen, you're a fucking idiot. Director of football or whatever else has gone and paid fucking way over the odds for a player that, quite frankly, is not worth that. Is that good business?
Yeah.
So again, that goes on too much in football.
Yeah, it's interesting how they make that determination that the value of this player is four. You know, when they could have had that for example.
Yeah, their argument would be, well, we're a bigger club. That's what we pay our players. And But you don't pay all players the same, particularly when they come from a lower level. So, you know, you give players incentives that they earn into their contract. You know, Ryan de Havilland didn't come in the same money as Archie Collins.
Right.
You know, that's quite normal. Archie had played 100 games in League One. Ryan came from Barnet. So Ryan knows that, and it's built in his contract that he'll earn more every year he's with us, and he get a new deal. You know, Archie's, you know, probably the best central midfielder in League One, so he's one of the highest paid players in League One. You know, and just, you know, and that's just football. But again, it comes down to good financial practice and management. So, you know, these are all the conversations we can get around the table, and we can stop the wastage, because hundreds of millions every year are wasted on scenarios like I've just described when they don't have to be. So anyway, enough of
good conversation.
What could be better? Yeah. Let's have a quick run through in the league. So
yeah,
maybe Liverpool are playing with toddlers, a bit like Peterborough, astounding, upsetting the odds. I still think Man City will win the Premier League by 10 points. I love watching Arsenal at the moment.
Arsenal's still giving a good run. I mean, poor Sheffield United.
Hey, let me tell you right now, Arsenal are like giving everybody a good scene to.
Yeah.
Everybody they're playing, the game's over by half time. So if they continue that and do that to Man City, well, then Arsenal, like I predicted 3 years ago, will be champions. which I did predict.
Yeah, as a neutral, it's great to see three teams within 2 points.
You
know, this close to the end of the season.
Yeah, but your money's on Man City still, right?
I mean, you've got to... It's theirs to lose still.
Yeah.
Especially with all the injuries that you've got.
Listen, exactly. If we can get some players back fit, and I'd definitely be asking why so many muscular injuries to so many in a squad. That's a real concern. Luckily, Jurgen's the best manager in the world, so he's been able to play 12-year-olds in place and still get results. So long may that continue. On to the championship. As I predicted, Leicester were having a wobble. They finally got back to winning ways last night.
Yeah, and good. Well done to Ipswich as well. It looked like they'd had their wobble.
Put them into the playoffs.
And they jumped right back up into second place.
Well done to the ownership of Ipswich as well as Kieran McKenna, because a little bit of business they did in January with Kiefer Moore, bringing in the boy, obviously we loved at Wimbledon, El Amadi, you know, and basically they had a bit of a rocky run, come through it, and they've won six in a row. I saw the highlights last night. So, yeah, listen, long may that continue. We've got a nice little promotion bonus in there. So, yeah, happy days. Sammy Smodics, he needs to be player of the year in the championship. That boy's got 26 goals, 20 league goals in a team that's fifth, sixth, bottom of the champ. He has to be player of the year, you know, in the champ. Southampton, still there, thereabouts. Leeds, I think, have won, 12 out of 13 games?
Yeah, they keep on. I mean, at the moment, it looks like it's a three-horse race. But, you know, as we saw with Ipswich, things change really quickly. Southampton, 8 points off second at this point, just lost three of the last five. After that winning run that they went on,
they'll come good again. Tired legs, they've got that pace, they've got quickness, they've got whatever else. I always say, when you've got pace, particularly as teams get tired second half of the season, so don't be surprised if they go strong again. Leeds, if they're fully fit, will be strong too. So it'll be a really interesting run. I don't think Leicester will win the league.
Well, it's only 3 points now from Ipswich.
Yep. I was going to say, I think Leeds will win the league.
Okay, we'll revisit that in 2 months' time.
Where else? Bottom of the champ.
We've got to talk about the bottom.
You couldn't call it. Well, you can call Rotherham, but you couldn't call anyone else.
23rd, Sheffield Wednesday, 38 points. And 16th, Plymouth on 40 points.
I kind of hope Wednesday do it, because a friend of mine, Josh Windus, I message him all the time. He messaged me on Instagram. And I messaged him the other day and said, geez, you guys have turned it around. So I kind of hope, you know what I mean, they stay up. So they're on an unbelievable run. And it could be one of what, seven teams down there, or two of seven teams that could go down?
And you look at them, I think that Huddersfield are probably vulnerable. They've only won eight all season. That's the second lowest. They've just drawn too many.
Yeah.
And draws are probably not going to get you out of that. They have to find a way to start winning.
Yeah. I worry about Birmingham as well at times. So, but they are scoring goals, but you do. I mean, I couldn't call it. I don't know.
Nope.
I don't know who's going down, you know. So
it's going to be a last minute winner on the last day of the season that, you know, probably determines who goes down.
Yeah, it's going to be heartache for some, and it's going to be like elation for others. So who knows what's going to go on. League One, fair play to Portsmouth, their manager. I mean, what a job he's done.
Yeah.
You know, what they're doing, they're not giving up. You know, they're just relentless. And then there's a chase behind them. And then you got obviously Stevenage and Stevie Evans again. Just like
hanging in there, right?
You know, you know what? I would say that's disrespectful. I don't think they're hanging in there. I think they're doing what they've done all season. So, and then an outside shout to Leighton Orient, who just had an unbelievable run, and you know, coming up, didn't have the greatest of starts, and their manager is just, he's done brilliant, so he won't be there long if he continues that vein. So yeah, really, really interesting, you know. So League One will be, it'll be an interesting run in, that's for sure. The next 11 games, you know, it'll be exciting.
And then if we go to League Two, we have
chaos at the top.
Didn't Mansfield lose last night? I saw
MK Dons beat them,
yeah, and Wrexham back into the top three. Stockport, a bit of a wobble. They haven't won in four now.
Yeah, MK Dons are only like 3 points or two points off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus. I mean, I keep making predictions. I thought Wrexham were going to win it by 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't call it. So, you know, again, I'd like to see Mansfield go up, because obviously I know the owners there have gone through with Nigel and stuff. So it'd be good to see them go up. And then, gee, can you imagine if Crewe and Morecambe were like two of the other three teams that ended up going out of that league and getting promotion.
And Barrow in the playoffs.
Oh, Barrow, yeah. I mean, how he's still managing there is beyond me. So the job he's done, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, really, really interesting.
And this week, Accrington Stanley sacked John Coleman and the assistant manager. It seems like that was a relationship that's been beyond the point of no repair for a little while.
Yeah. I see my old sparring partner, Andy Holt, who we fell out during COVID and stuff. He getting hammered. I think he deactivated his Twitter account.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, he's, again, and I'm not one to jump on anyone. All I say is the man constantly pays his bills, puts his money in every year. It's a thankless task. He's not asking for any reward. He's not asking to get paid. He's not asking for a pat on the fucking back. And I think what they did, that management team earlier on in the season, for me, you know what I'm like. You know,
yeah, he said at the time, right? It was like, that's it.
Them two to being in the boot of a car, you know, going up a mountain somewhere, you know what I mean? So, you know, I am, for the fans who are heckling him or going at him, you know, lay off, because I'm not sure you're going to get many great owners at Ackling and Stanley, with all due respect to them.
No, and I think that, you know, you, as you follow kind of his, the perspectives and his, what feels like his mindset has shifted, where he's kind of just sick of it all. And, you know, it feels like he's fallen out of love a little bit. Whether he was never really in love, but he did it as a, you know, I love my town and I want to see the football club survive and thrive as being part of the community.
Yeah.
And
he's done nothing wrong.
He's got the council. Yeah. And he's got the council basically saying no to everything he's trying to do.
Yeah.
And so he's throwing his hands up saying, what the, you know, I can't do it all on my own.
You know what? It's, yeah, when you're losing, you know, everything goes against you, you know, and it's just football. Hopefully it'll turn for him, you know, because obviously they're, you know, they've done it now with, you know, they were out of contract in a few months anyway. I don't think they're making the playoffs. So if he was sick of the sight of them after what happened, he gave it a fair, they've got what, 4 or 5 months since that fallout?
Yeah, it was early in the season.
Yeah, they've had a fair run. At the end of the day, you know, he's somebody that, yeah, their fans there should really protect. And I get the whole, there wasn't a 12-page, you know, love letter to the management team when they left, but, you know, maybe that was somebody in the social media department jumped the gun and put it in those. But you know what? Lay off the guy, the owner. So, you know, regardless of how I am with him or us falling out, whatever else, you know, he doesn't deserve that kind of crap or flack.
And speaking of owners on friendly terms with you, Forest Green are showing signs of life. They're 5 points adrift now, still a big gap, but it's not the gap it was a few weeks ago. So not all hope is lost. In fact, there's only for Sutton as well at the bottom, they're 6 points adrift now, which again, I think a few weeks ago, it felt like that. Those gaps are a lot bigger.
I am astonished because obviously the veggie burger king, you know, he's worth what, £500 million? So I am, you know, astonished that Forest Green are even struggling in the first place. So, but again, who am I to say? You know, the guy pays his bills and he runs his club and it's up to him. And, you know, he's on a crusade to save the planet. So good luck to him.
In the National League, I don't know if I have the results down here, but
yeah, Chesterfield Barnett won last night.
Yeah, Chesterfield was stuffed Dorking. That was it. They got stuffed at Dorking, you know, which just seemed like it was out of nowhere.
Probably because they're up, in my opinion.
Yeah,
probably, you know, maybe Cookie needed that result. Some of the players probably thought they were on the beach, but they're going to win that league. Kudos to them. Fair play to Paul Cook. And, you know, again, well-run club.
Because Dorking were in the bottom four. And so,
yeah, shocking. Shocking. You wouldn't have put odds. You wouldn't have put bets on that. Yeah, and that's football. That's football for you, baby. So, you know, it's, yeah, good luck to the rest of them in the playoff race there. There's a few clubs. I mean, Bromley are still, like, doing incredibly well. I saw somewhere at Rochdale potentially agreeing a deal to be taken over. So that's good news.
And Oldham back up in there in the playoffs. So that's pretty tight as well. I did see about Torquay as well, looking for a new owner.
I did. Nice club. Interesting. You know, it's, yeah. I mean, surely those clubs will pick up somebody. I mean, the value of football clubs has gone through the roof. You know, that's the business. So, all right, my man. Well, look, let's call it a day there. We're on the hour mark, and I'll get back in the pool. And we shall reconvene next week as you get off for your work day.
Yeah, we'll have to find some time to in amongst the travel and the conferences, but I'm sure we'll make it happen.
Definitely.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody.